Thank you for joining us. The Unitarian Universalist Church of Indianapolis is located at 615 West 43rd Street in Indianapolis, Indiana, just south of the Butler University campus. Our Sunday services begin at 9:15 and 11 a.m. The nursery is open for both services. Religious education programs for school-aged youth are available during the second service and run until 12:30. Check out our website at www.uui.org for more information about our church, as well as additional sermon podcasts. We hope you enjoy this podcast sermon, and we also hope you will join us in person soon. The real thing is even better.
Those moments of quiet are exceptionally rich. Especially when there's the sound of a baby cooing. Life is so precious. And it is such a privilege and an honor to live. This weather is a bit bleak for me. I don't know if anyone else feels that way. It's a little gray and a little quiet and a little oppressive. I remember weather like this when I was younger. I grew up on a farm, and like many of you and grew up on farms or elsewhere, in families that weren't of means, the children had to find ways to make money even when we were young in order to buy clothes that were store-bought rather than homemade or hand-me-down. To have spending money during the school year to go on trips or go to the movies or things like that. I see heads nodding. My sisters and I were in 4-H, so we did as many projects as we could for the county fair so we could win prize money. And we cleaned up, actually. And we did. But I, being the first boy in my family and the oldest son, I worked in the fields, I worked in the barns, I fed cattle, did things that family farms have to do, but I also worked for other people, mowing lawns, shoveling snow, taking ice and snow off roofs, anything that I could. One day my father came home when I was 17, and he said that he had been in town, and one of the men had asked him if I would be available to do a job, and this job was to be an assistant cook at a deer hunting camp. What's a deer hunting camp? Maybe some city folks are wondering. But in northern Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, and places like that, groups of people, friends, and sometimes families would have this acreage where they would go hunt deer. And they would have a camp, and the camp consisted of a deer hunting shack. Not a cabin, not a cottage, but a shack. So this person was the cook at the camp. He was also one of the hunters and part of this camp. And so I said, first of all, well, how much are they paying? Which is always a good thing to ask, right? Yeah. And when it was, I go, okay, I could do it for that. I said I would. So on the Friday before deer hunting season, I got picked up by someone, and we drove up the state highway in northern Wisconsin. And eventually we went through Spooner and got to Hayward, and then we went off onto a county road. And we rode on that for a while, and then we went on to a gravel road, another county road, and then we got onto a township road, which was just who knows what it was. And then eventually we dipped down into a marsh and went into the woods on a dirt road, winding our way through the trees, and we came to a stop, and there before me was the shack. It was everything you can imagine a shack to be, a tar paper roof, leaky walls. There was no electricity, no running water. The outhouse was called the throne, and it was an outhouse over the edge of a ravine. And so I won't go into details about the rest. I'm sure if anybody hiking through the woods would have been quite surprised at what they saw if they happened upon it. But my job was to help the cook. So that night, after being introduced to dishpan martinis, has anyone ever had a dishpan martini? Oh, it's quite something. I think that's where I got my ignominious start with my drinking. But it's a white enameled wash pan that you would wash your face in. And they would take icicles off the eaves and put it in there and mix in the gin and vermouth, you know, swish it around and pour it into little juice jars for everyone. And so that was a dish pan martini. Anyway, I go to bed that night, and it was triple bunk beds. The room was filled with these, you know, people, these doctors and lawyers and their kids, you know, which I knew I went to school with. And it was noisy, it was snoring and this and that, and the air still had smoke in it from everybody smoking that night. And I finally fell asleep. And next thing I knew, there was a tap on my shoulder, and it was a cook saying, time to get up. It was probably, you know, 4 a.m. or something like that. So we proceeded to make, on the wood stove, pancakes, bacon, sausage, eggs, toast, coffee. And all the men got up, put on their deer hunting clothes, all that red, it was quite blinding, and served them everything. And then it was time to go out because it was daylight, and everyone heads out the door with their rifles, leaving me with this mess. Piles of pans and plates and griddles, and I had to wash everything. So I'm getting paid for this. I, you know, bucked up, and I went outside with buckets of water to pour into onto kettles on the stove to heat it up. I poured the water into the sink, and I'm standing there getting ready, and I noticed there was a small transistor radio. And so I fiddled with it until I found a station. And while I looked out into the bleak November morning, I heard this song.
I remember when I was a little girl, our house caught on fire. I will never forget the look on my father's face as he bundled me up and rushed me through the burning building out onto the pavement. I stood there, shivering in my pajamas, and watched while the whole world went up in flames. And when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to a fire? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all there is. Then when I was 12 years old, my father took me to the circus, the greatest show on earth. There were clowns and an elephant and dancing bears. And the most beautiful woman in the world in pink tights flying high above our heads. And as I sat there watching all this marvelous spectacle, I couldn't help but feel like something was missing. I don't know what. But when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to a circus? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? Huh. If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all there is. And then I fell in love. Oh, head over heels in love with the most wonderful boy in the world. We would go for long walks along the river and sit there for hours just gazing into each other's eyes. We were so in love. And then one day, he went away, and I thought I would die. But I didn't. And when I didn't, I said to myself, is that all there is to love? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friend, then let's keep dancing. I have a feeling I know what you're thinking about now. If that's how she feels about it, then why doesn't she just end it all now? Oh, no, 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 no. I am in no rush to get to that final moment, because the one thing I can tell you is that as sure as I am standing here now talking to you, when that final moment comes and I am breathing my last breath, the one thing I am certain of is that I will say to myself, is that all there is? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all there is.
So you can imagine what my little 17-year-old gay soul was going, ah, that's what I'm feeling. Someone gave voice finally to what I had been unable to even discern or to think of. Is that all there is? Because that is how I had thought about my life. Is that all there is? I never wanted to accept my life. I don't know about you, but I was always disappointed. And I had an attitude of like, well, this isn't my real life. This is a mistake. Does anyone else ever feel that way at any time in your life? Yeah, boy, there must be a mistake. Or the if-onlys. Any of you know what the if-onlys are? Do any of you have the if-onlys? If only I had born in a different time. I always thought I should have been born in the 1930s or something, worn those great tweed suits and a fedora, you know, and lived in London or in New York in the 30s rather than on a little dairy farm in northern Wisconsin in the 50s. Or if only I had been born to different parents. Any of you moms and dads out there hear that from your kids? Yeah, if only you hadn't been my parents. If only I had been born somewhere else, to somebody else, some better parents. Or if only I'd been born into money, right? That's a good one. Or in a different country. Or if only I had been, if only I'd married a different person. That's always a big one too. Anyone think of another one that's been a big one in their life or someone's life? If only...
Different decisions.
Different jobs. Relationships. Yeah, right? If only. Life can be disappointing. But you know what? Some of us have really good imaginations and are able to live fantasy lives long after we are children. And so we live out a life that is someone else's actually rather than our own. It's this imagined life in that if only turns into a fantasy, into an imagined reality, and then we're basing everything, I would do this at least, against this hypothetical imagined life. And meanwhile, my own life is going to hell. You know, I'm not paying attention to my own life. I'm not living the life and accepting the life that I chose or that was given to me. Because you know what? Our lives are the way they are because they're opportunities for us to grow and to change. to grow and to change. So acceptance. We need to accept our lives and we need to accept life as it is. The reading this morning is a very brilliant one. The Dalai Lama has even referred to this section of the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous, saying that is the wisdom that he teaches, that the Buddha taught. And in my own life, it made all the difference in the world. I had been given this course by my mentor because I always was finding fault with you. You know, my life is a mess because of you. My life is a mess because of my parents. I am unhappy because I don't have success in my career. I am feeling inside like I am less than because of the situations around me. And I couldn't understand that they were perfect, that everything was the way it was supposed to be. As the reading says, nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Do with that as whatever you want. There are no mistakes. So, accepting life on life's terms. That's what the reading is about. Accepting life as being the way it is, as a starting off point. And we cannot be happy until we do that. I was able to quit blaming others, especially my parents, for the way my life was and started taking responsibility, not all at once, it's a day at a time, but slowly taking responsibility for my life and accepting my life. And I learned that I needed to live life as life is and not the way I wanted it to be. A lot of us are very strong-willed. We have big egos, and we feel we can push our way through life rather than surrendering to life, which we are going to talk about in just a moment. The reading teaches us, as do many of the great teachers in the world, both religious and secular, that not to change the world. Do not try to change the world. Change yourself first, and then the world will change. Correct? Change yourself and then the world will change because our attitude will change. Maybe nothing will have changed at all, but our attitude about it will have changed. And then, and just maybe then, the reality will change. But we have to start first with ourselves. Life changes just by accepting it. When we accept our flaws, when we accept our bodies, when we accept our abilities, when we accept our past, and when we accept our mistakes. I don't know about you, but I have made a few mistakes in my life, and I used to dwell on those constantly and beat myself up constantly and use those as an excuse for not living. But maybe none of you have. Maybe you're perfect people. I would love that because I will talk to you out there afterwards and you can tell me the secret of this. But just for a moment, think about something in your own life that you had found totally unacceptable, that you struggled with, that you battled with, and then because of something, you accepted it, and then everything changed. Just think about that. I've heard amazing stories from some of you, and in my ministries and in my life, when people have done this. When we accept something that we previously found unacceptable, we are transformed and we transcend that thing. There's a wonderful Mary Oliver poem that we've read here before, and lots of you who are Unitarian Universalists have heard it, and I'm just going to share the last line with you. It says this, and listen carefully, because this is profound. And she asked at the end of this poem, "Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? What is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" You know, even if we believe in reincarnation, that we have many lives, as who we are now, we only have one life. So what are we waiting for? Why are we holding back from living? And that thing that will release us from the bondage of self is to accept our life, to accept our circumstances, and to work with that. So how do we do that? You know, how do we do it? It's easy for me to stand up here and say, this is what to do. So we're going to get a little practical now. We're going to try to figure out how to do that. It's easy if you're willing. It's easy if you're willing to do it. There's one of our wonderful transcendentalist foremothers, our spiritual mother, Margaret Fuller. We observed the bicentenary of her birth just 2 years ago. She was a wonderful woman. She was in Boston. She was friends with Emerson and the other transcendentalists. She was the first editor of a female editor of a magazine. She was one of the early feminists. I mean, just think how long ago this is. She left a lot of writings, but she was a transcendentalist. And one of the things that she once said is this. Now listen to this, okay? She said this. I accept the universe. I accept the universe. Can you imagine? Can you imagine this? She was a diminutive woman. She gets up there and she says, I accept the universe. I mean, how transcendent is that? How much of a surrender is that? How unconditionally does she embrace that, that she can say that? I accept the universe, which means absolutely everything. And because she said that, it brought her back down into her shoes, her tiny little size 3 shoes. And then she could get on with accepting everything. Because she and the transcendentalists saw the unity of all things, the universality of all things, and the interconnectedness of all things. That's where we get our principle, our 7th principle. So, for us to be able to... I was going to say, get up, stand on top of your chair and let's all say that. But that's impractical. We won't do that today. But to get to that place where we could say that, I don't know how often I can say that. Sometimes I am ecstatic, you know. And actually, after Sunday services, I feel that way. After being here with you and feeling all the love. But how we get there to that place is that we have to transcend all the mundane things of life. You know, the status quo, all those external things that we put so much energy into, the false reality, and enter into that place where we can even let go of the idea of ourselves. That's what we need to do. And we can have help with that. And we go there so we can figure out. We have to sit down in a chair, in quiet, wherever it is as we walk, and we have to figure out why we have the lives we have. We have to do that. Be we 5 years old, 10 years old, 15, 20, 75, 80, we have to figure that out. And then when we figure that out, we become aware of the opportunities there are for truly living, living fully, and for growing. And then we will truly know our purpose in life. We will know our purpose in life. So, we all have choices. You know, from the beginning of our life, we have choices. I know one of the new parenting things is to not give kids too many choices. Like when it's time to get ready to go to school, you put out, do you want to wear the red shirt or the blue shirt? Rather than saying, here's 10 shirts. You know, so you've got to make it manageable. And everyone always have choices. I've made bad choices in my life. I've made good choices in my life. You too, right? We always have choices. And choices are opportunities then that lead us somewhere else. And they all add up. And they take us way out there eventually. Even people who've had their liberties taken away, people who are incarcerated or imprisoned or held hostage, they still have a choice. They can choose to live. Every day that we get up, we choose to live. That is a choice that we make every time we throw down the covers and put our feet on the floor. We make a choice. That is power. Now, the more we accept life as it is, the more options we have. It seems counterintuitive. If we just accept things as they are, then we have more options. But it is true because of this. When we quit fighting and struggling with our lives and with wanting things to be different, when we give up and say, I surrender, we find inner peace. When we accept our life, we get inner peace. And then when we have inner peace, then we get strength. And with that strength comes empowerment. And with that empowerment comes more options. Do you see that? That inner peace then gives us more options because we have inner strength. We are empowered then. And that is the way of the peaceful warrior. The peaceful warrior. So we all have expectations about our lives, about life in general. We are given them as a child. We find them from books, from the media, or just the stuff we come into this world with. We have expectations of what life is supposed to be like. And it isn't always that way. And if we let go of those expectations and allow just the reality of our lives and life in general to pervade us, then we find that peace. I'm going to show you in just a moment a brief video of someone who is in that place. It's from a documentary from 1999 by Jenny Livingston called Paris is Burning. It was shot in the 1980s of the drag ball culture in Harlem in Upper Manhattan, black, Latino, gay, transgendered, and lesbian life. And about voguing, remember the whole voguing thing? Madonna sort of appropriated that from this very, very old culture. Don't get me started, but it was but it was good. I mean, it made us see what this vibrant life that these people had created for themselves because of the oppression, because of race, economics, and gender identity and expression. So here we have a black drag queen, and we say that with pride, and her name is Dorian Corey. So let's see what she has to say.
I always had hopes of being a big star. Then I look, as you get older, you aim a little lower. And I just say, well, yeah, you still might make an impression. Everybody wants to leave something behind them, some impression, some mark upon the world. And then you think, you left a mark on the world. If you just get through it. And a few people remember your name. Then you left them all. You don't have to bend the whole world. I think it's better to just enjoy it. Pay your dues. And enjoy it. If you shoot an arrow and it goes real high, hooray for you.
Miss Dorian Corey, drag queen wisdom. You don't have to bend the whole world. When I heard that, I'm going, oh, wow. That's the expectation I had from my life. Maybe other people too. You're gonna be the best attorney. Be the best something. You're going to be a star, right? You're going to be the best in your field, and maybe that's just not in your cards. Maybe the way things have been set up in your life, that's not what you're supposed to be. And so we all need to aim a little lower. That maybe sounds like giving up hope, or maybe it sounds like lowering the expectations, but I think it's acceptance. You know, not everyone can be the best, not everyone can be a star, but we all are uniquely who we are, and we have unique gifts and talents, and we're doing what we're supposed to be doing even when we don't realize it. You know, some people come into the world just to be loving and companions to people. And that's what they're supposed to be doing. And when we accept that rather than going, well, I should be, you know, all these things we learn from our teachers and our parents, you're supposed to be successful and they're all external things. But when we accept our life, we get drawn back into our souls and our souls get to truly express what it is and who it is that we are. And as Ms. Corey says, if you shoot an arrow and you hit something, hooray for you. Which is true. It is so true. But we get freedom from accepting our lives. We get freedom from accepting life as the way it is supposed to be. And with that freedom comes more options. And those options include doing something in the world. We can change and transform ourselves, and we can change and transform the world, but we start with ourselves. So can you imagine if we all quit struggling with that, those what-ifs and if-onlys, and this is what I had expected for my life, and we just goes, you know what, this is the way life is, and this is the way my life is, and then we just find that place of peace. And then we see it as who we are, and we see what options are available to us, and we get to really then find our purpose in life. It would be a different world to live in. It would be a place of compassion, of caring, and mostly of peace. When we figure out our purpose, we can do that on our own, and we can do it in community. Our church right now is figuring out our purpose, our mission, and our vision by having community circles and other dialogues. And this in our whole community in Indianapolis, the United States, and the world. If we all just quit fighting and struggling, which creates suffering, despair, and unhappiness, then we would have peace. So we're not in this alone. We have each other. And as it says in the readings, we have God, and God as you understand God. And the God as I understand God, in which a lot of people do in different ways, spirit, ancestors, the earth, is constantly communicating with us. There is a rushing, roaring, sizzling, sparkling network of communications, a web that we exist in. And if we stop and open our ears, open our minds and our hearts, and listen, and we do that by praying, by meditating, we will hear. I promise you, you will hear, and we will hear what it is that we are to do in this life. So we accept our lives as they are, and not what we want them to be. That's where we start. So I would like to end with a prayer. It's one you all know. And if you would please stand in body or spirit and together. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. May it be so.
Remain standing as we sing in the Teal Hymnals number 1052, The Oneness of Everything, by our own UU composer Jim Scott. 1052.
So let's put down the hymnals, and please, if you care to, join hands, come across the aisle, link up however you can. Know that you are loved, even if you do not feel loved in this moment. Know that you are whole, even though you may feel broken in this moment. Know that there is hope, even if you feel hopeless in this moment. Accept things as they are, and most of all, accept yourself and your one wild and precious life. Go in peace.
Thank you again for joining us online. We hope to see you next Sunday, or as soon as you are able. UUI will be waiting for you. If you are not in the Indianapolis area, visit www.uua.org to find a Unitarian Universalist congregation near you. Blessed be.